Dave here. It's a real pleasure to introduce our visiting speaker this morning, Phil Green. For many years, Barnabas has supported the work of Home for Good. Phil's been the chief executive of Home for Good since it started in 2014. And their mission, if you like, their vision, is to help find a home for every child who needs it by encouraging Christians and encouraging churches in the whole area of fostering and adoption. This year, he's moving on from Home for Good and he's joined another organisation, a global organisation called World Without Orphans, who are looking to set up similar movements all around the world. Through his work for Home for Good in the UK, Phil has helped thousands of children and families and churches. So it's such a good example of putting your faith into action and seeing God use it to bring about real change. And Phil agreed to preach for us, which we were delighted about. And obviously he can't be with us in person, so he's produced a video which we're really looking forward to watching in a moment. As he opens the scriptures, our prayer is that God would really speak to us, both individually and as a church, and really help us to see how he wants us to respond to him. If today's talk leaves you with anything you want to talk through, maybe ideas you've got or something you want to pray about, then do please be in touch. But as it is, it's now time to hand over to Phil, and I'm sure you'll be massively blessed by listening to him.
Hello, it's great to have this opportunity to share with you today. It feels strange not to be able to see you in person, but I hope that as I open the Word of God and share stories from around the UK, you'll be inspired at what the church is doing and what the church can do to make a difference in the lives of vulnerable children. Many of you will be listening to this on Father's Day, and for many, this is a day where we celebrate family life. But I'm very aware that for some, this can be a painful day, and a day where we realise that our family life is not quite how we want it to be. I also recognise that as we talk about fostering adoption, it can be a very emotional subject for some people. So I'll try and talk about it as sensitively as possible. But if emotions kind of rear up, please do talk to someone about that, whether it's your small group leader or someone from the ministry team. There are many people within this church family who would love to support you and pray with you. So don't go alone. But let me launch in with a story to introduce the subject for today. A few years ago, in the city of Southampton, church leaders realised that the council's budget was about to be cut drastically. So they went to the councillors and said, "Hey, we're here to help you. As churches, we have a lot of resources. We have buildings that can be used, volunteers that can be brought together, and also a fair bit of money. How can we serve you during this difficult time for the city?" Now, the councillors were surprised by the church's offer, because usually when church leaders go speak to the council, it's to complain that the council are doing this and they need to stop doing this or they need to start doing this. So this offer of help from church leaders kind of took the council by surprise. But they organised a big meeting so that they could outline some of the needs the city faced. So after this meeting, the church leaders went away and they prayed about it for 21 days. And they went back to the council with a few very specific things that they could do to make a difference, because they wanted to be strategic. And one of the things the council needed was 80 new foster carers, because many of the city's existing foster carers were retiring and many more children were entering the care system. So churches of Southampton said, "We will help you find 40 foster carers over this year." Now, the council's response initially was kind of to laugh at them and saying, like, "Do you not know how hard it is to recruit foster carers? Like, what do you think our marketing team are doing all the time? But you know what? If you as the churches of Southampton could find us 4 new foster carers this year, we'd be delighted. So we'll help you run your campaign." So for the next 12 months, churches of Southampton spoke about fostering and encouraged people to consider it. And that year, more than 70 people stepped forward to foster and adopt. The city was bowled over, and by the end of the year, 13 of those people had already been through the training process, been assessed, and they'd welcomed children into their home. And many more were still in the process. And that's just such a good news story. It's good news for children who found homes they desperately needed. And also it's good news for the church in Southampton to be recognised as demonstrating God's love to the city in such a practical way. We learned many things through that example, but one thing we learned was this: churches in the UK are competitive. So when churches in Liverpool and Reading and Bristol and Nottingham heard about this, they were like, we want to do that too, and we think we can do better. So Reading set out to find 50 homes for vulnerable children. Nottingham last year launched a campaign to find 100 homes for vulnerable children. And across the country, in towns and cities and counties, churches are coming together to find homes for the most vulnerable children in their community. And this is important for two reasons. The first reason is this: there is a crisis in the UK. Each year, about 40,000 children enter the care system. That's 40,000 children for a whole host of different reasons are unable to live with their birth families. Now, many of them will go into foster care, and while social workers and other professionals work with their birth families to provide them support, and then it'll be possible for the children to return home. And that's great when that is possible. But sadly, for too many children, they end up having to stay in foster care, and some will need to go on to be adopted into a new forever family. And as a result, there's a real problem in this country. We urgently need 8,000 more foster carers, and there are currently about 3,000 children waiting to be adopted. Now, those children waiting to be adopted, they're not babies. They tend to be over the age of three years old. They're from black minority ethnic groups. They are part of sibling groups that social workers are desperate to keep together, and they have additional needs. And 41% of those children have been waiting for more than 18 months to find for an adoptive family to come forwards for them. 18 months. And remember what I said earlier, a lot of these children are older children, so they know that they're waiting to be adopted. Just imagine what that does for a child, that they know that they're waiting for a family to come forward to adopt them. How must they feel if no one comes forward? And it's not just challenging for children and young people in the care system. Some of those challenges last a lifetime. It's just not fair, is it, that a child, for no fault of its own, has an increased likelihood to end up on that trajectory in life? Now, don't misunderstand me. That does not happen to all children who enter the care system. Many go on to live fantastic lives, and it's a real testament for the resilience of children and young people, and also the great work that foster carers and adoptive families do. But one kind of reoccurring theme when you look at all the stories of all these children is that if they're able to be placed in a loving and safe and secure permanent family, they're less likely to become one of those sad statistics. So that's one reason why this is really important, because there's a crisis in the UK. The second reason why this is really important is because for us as Christians, the Bible calls us to care for vulnerable children. There are dozens of verses in the Bible that speaks of how God calls his people to care for the orphan and the fatherless. And there are many other verses that talk about how we're meant to be caring for those who are vulnerable and oppressed and in need in a whole variety of ways. So this is our mandate as the Church of God. When Home for Good launched, there was 9,000 foster carers urgently needed in the UK, and there was 6,000 children waiting to be adopted. And as we launched, we estimated that we had reach into about 15,000 churches. So you do the maths. If one individual couple or family from each of those churches stepped forward to foster or adopt, the church in the UK would be responsible for providing a home for every child who needs one at that moment in time. Wouldn't that be good news? Wouldn't that be good news for those children? Wouldn't that be good news for the church in this country to be known as providing homes for those children that desperately need one? But we also realise that not everyone is called to foster or adopt. But wouldn't it be great if other people within those church congregations wrapped around those families who did foster or adopt to offer them the support that they need? Fostering and adoption is challenging. So wouldn't it be great if the rest of the church supported those that did it? And that's the idea behind Home for Good. We exist to inspire Christians to think about fostering or adopting, and then we want to equip those around them to support them as they do that. So today I'd like to talk a little bit about hospitality through the lens of fostering and adoption. But I'm very aware that you might think it's strange talking about hospitality right now in the middle of a global pandemic that for many of us means we're very restricted to our homes right now. And we're unable to invite people into our homes. And often that's the kind of the main definition of hospitality, isn't it? It's inviting people into our homes and enjoying time with them and supporting them and helping them. But we can't do that right now. Well, I hope that kind of looking at hospitality right now will help us have a richer definition of what hospitality actually is and help us kind of think through what does that mean for us right now in the middle of this global pandemic we find ourselves in and in the future as hopefully we kind of move on from this strange and worrying season. So we're going to do this by looking at the story of the Good Samaritan. And I just want to emphasise that although I'd love it if that by the end of this talk, all of you were emailing me, telling me that you wanted to sign up to foster and adopt right now, I recognise that God is probably not calling all of you to foster or adopt. But I am pretty sure that God wants all of us to practice hospitality in one way or another. So although I will be talking about this through the lens of fostering adoption, I'm sure God will be speaking to you about what this means for you in your particular context right now. So let's read the Good Samaritan together. It's in Luke chapter 10, and I'll start at verse 25. But just as I begin to read it, the photo of Patrick Hutchinson is going to appear on the screen. And you may have seen Patrick last weekend as he carried a far right wing protester who had injured themselves in protests in London. So you have this black guy carrying someone who is protesting against them. Yet when this person got injured, Patrick picked him up and took him to safety. And for me, that is a wonderful picture of the Good Samaritan, and it illustrates so well what we're going to be thinking about this morning. So let's read the story of the Good Samaritan together. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbour as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbour?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he travelled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I'll reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.' Which of these three do you think was a neighbour to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." And I want to share 3 reflections on this passage. The first is, by telling this story, Jesus removes the boundaries. When the teacher of the law asked Jesus this question, "Who is my neighbour?" I'm sure he wanted Jesus to narrow the boundaries. I'm sure he'd have loved it if Jesus said, "Oh, your neighbour. Oh, that's the people who live next door to you. It's your friends, it's your family, it's the people who you work with. It's the people who are just like you." But in telling a story that featured the worst enemies of the Jewish people, the Samaritans, he made it quite clear that not only was Jesus talking about everyone when he was talking about neighbour, he was particularly talking about our enemies, the stranger, the people who are different from us, the people we don't get along with. We are to love everybody. I used to think I was really good at hospitality. In fact, I probably would have gone as far as to say, I thought I had the gift of hospitality. I used to love welcoming people into my home. I used to love doing barbecues and all of that kind of thing. I used to regularly bring friends and family around for meals. Then one day, a close friend of mine sat me down and said to me, "Phil, I don't think you're good at hospitality." And I was a little bit taken aback because he had just come round my house for a barbecue a few nights earlier. So I was a little bit offended. And he continued, he said, "Well, Phil, don't misunderstand me. You're good at fellowship, and that's what you're doing. And that's not a bad thing. It's a good thing when you're inviting friends and family around. That's a really good and commendable thing to do. But don't pretend it's hospitality." Because he said, hospitality is to be friends with strangers. That's what the word hospitality means. And when you're having barbecues and meals at your house, that's not what you're doing. You're inviting around people just like you. You're not inviting strangers around. And that really kind of shocked me and really got me thinking. So what does that mean to you? Like, who might Jesus be telling you to love during this season? Who could you show hospitality to? Who is different from you? Someone you don't normally get along with? Someone who might be excluded from your kind of usual circles? Who might Jesus be placing on your heart to love and support and care for over the next couple of weeks? Secondly, in telling this story, Jesus flips it around. You see, this story would have been a good story had it been a Samaritan man who had got injured and it was a Jewish person who had helped him. You could have made the same point. But in telling it this way, Jesus placed his listener, the Jewish people, in the place of vulnerability. And vulnerability changes how we see things and how we interpret things. To be in a place of vulnerability, when we're forced to think, what would I want if it was me that needed help? Or what would I want to happen if it was my children who needed help? It changes the way we think about a situation. And this is a reoccurring theme throughout the Bible. In the Old Testament, as the Israelites are about to enter the Promised Land, God is instructing them on how they should live when they get there. And God said that they should not oppress people, that they should love the foreigner, that they should care for those who are vulnerable. And he said, why should you do this? It's because when you were in Egypt, you were oppressed. You were the foreigner. You were vulnerable. You know how it feels. So when you're in the Promised Land, I don't want you treating people like that. I want you to treat people like you wished you had been treated. Fast forward to the New Testament. And when Jesus is talking about forgiveness, he does the same thing. He motivates us to forgive by saying, you have been forgiven much by God. Therefore, you should forgive those who hurt you. And then we've been adopted into God's family. We have hope because God has welcomed us, the outsider, into his family. He did not need to do that. We needed him to do that. So we know what it's like to be in the place of need, to be in the place of vulnerability, and to know what it's like to find the help that we need. So think about that person who I've asked you to think about, who you might show love to over the next couple of weeks. What would it look like for you to place yourself in their shoes? How might they be feeling right now? And how might that help you understand how you can love them and care for them better? And then the third point I want to make is this, is by telling this story, Jesus tells us to go above and beyond. This would have been a good story, it would have still worked, had the Samaritan man just put the Jewish man on his donkey and taken him to the local Jewish hospital, left him there and got on with his day. But that's not what happened. He took him to an inn, he continued to care for him, he paid for his treatment, and he even said that he would go back at some time in the future and pay the rest of the bill. Wow. This man went through a great lot of inconvenience. He well went above and beyond to care for the injured man. Now, I have a confession to make. I see myself as someone who likes helping people. I see myself as a caring person. But the confession is this. I really only like doing that when it fits with my schedule. It kind of frustrates me, it annoys me, and I'm less likely to do that if it causes me an inconvenience. And I know that that's a problem because Jesus tells us to go above and beyond. So think back to the person I've encouraged you to think about. What would it look like for you to care for them, to love them in a way that's inconvenient to you? What would it look like for you to go above and beyond with that person? We are called to love the stranger. We are called to welcome the stranger. So let's think about how this might look. But first, we need to kind of recognise that this is quite a countercultural idea. I have a young family, and one of our favourite films is Paddington. And there's a great quote in the film. Auntie Lucy is about to send Paddington from the deepest, darkest Peru to London. And Paddington is understandably nervous. And this is what Aunt Lucy says to him. People in England sent their children by train with labels around their necks so that they could be taken care of by complete strangers in the countryside where it was safe. They will not have forgotten how to treat strangers. Now, of course, when Paddington turned up in London, that was not what he experienced. He indeed experienced a country that had totally forgotten how to treat the stranger. Now, the COVID-19 has really got us thinking about new words and entered a whole load of new words into our vocabularies. One of these is the whole idea of bubbles. And now, in the context of COVID-19, bubbles kind of make sense. A bubble keeps us safe and it also keeps other people safe. But the reality is, bubbles often are a part of our life. Long before COVID-19 came along, we kind of bubble ourselves together with people like us, people we feel safe around, people we enjoy being around, and people like us, and other people who are different from us, who we might not get along with. We put them in other bubbles, and those bubbles don't mix. And that's a problem. We have a saying in English, don't we, that an Englishman's home is his castle. And again, our homes at the moment are places where we can experience safety and keep other people safe. And that's a good thing. So don't misunderstand me. But castles are generally about building walls and digging moats to keep people out, to keep the troubles of the world outside so that me and my family are safe and comfortable inside. And sadly, many churches in the UK are like that as well. I just don't think God is calling us to build homes or churches that are like castles. I believe he wants us to build hospitals. Now, hospitals is the same kind of word, isn't it, as hospitality. And hospitals are about welcoming people in, broken people in, people who are in a mess, inviting them in all their mess, and then caring for them and helping them become restored and find healing. And that's what I believe vulnerable children in the UK need. They need welcoming into homes that can care for them, where they can experience restoration and hope for the future. Now, too often, when we practice hospitality, when we practice being friends with strangers, we go out to where they're at and help them there. And again, that's a good thing and that can be appropriate. But we can be very reluctant to bring them back in to our churches and into our homes. And that is what I feel that we need to do if we are going to offer true hope to more people through hospitality. And across the UK, that's what people are doing. We are seeing people up and down the country choosing to open up their homes, to have their lives turned upside down to welcome vulnerable children. Let me just share kind of one story to inspire you. A few years ago, I met a couple who had been fostering for a year and they shared me their story. They had taken early retirement and their plan was as soon as they retired, they were going to be missionaries in South America. But as they took early retirement, one of them had health complications. And although the health complications were basically sorted out, it meant that they couldn't go to South America to be missionaries. The doctors advised against that. And they were distraught. For their whole working life, they had been building up to this moment. And now they couldn't do it. They didn't know what God was doing. They went to the Christian festival, Spring Harvest, and they were in a bad place. But during that week, God spoke to them about the need for foster carers for vulnerable children in the UK. And they were like, you know what? We could do that. Perhaps that's what God wants us to do with our retirement. So they went home, they contacted their local authority, they were trained, they were assessed, and they became foster carers. And I was speaking to them a year into their fostering journey, and they were telling me about how difficult the year had been, because it's hard being a foster carer, but also how rewarding it had been as they had welcomed broken children and young people into their home and see the restoration that was beginning to take place. Now, I love telling that story when there's people in a church who are over the age of 50. You see, don't rule yourself out of becoming a foster carer or an adoptive parent. We are too quickly to rule ourselves out. And you know what? You might be able to do it. And some of you might be thinking, well, during COVID-19, surely now is not the time to think about fostering or adopting. But actually, right now, local authorities and agencies across the country are desperate to find and train and assess more foster carers and adopters, because the need is growing. So now may well be the time to think about fostering or adopting. And also, across the UK, we are seeing churches do amazing things to support families who are fostering or adopting. I was at a meeting and someone told me about this church-run coffee shop. And if you're a foster carer and you go to this coffee shop, while you have a cup of coffee, someone in the back room will do your ironing for you. Like, how amazing is that? In the meeting, a couple of people began to cry because they were foster carers and they recognised just how significant that would be for them. And then amazingly, someone else stuck up their hand and said, huh, yesterday our church took up a special offering so we could buy an industrial iron so we could do the same. That church now has two industrial irons and every week they have an ironing party where mostly elderly members of the congregation come together and they do ironing for foster carers and adoptive families from their community. And now other churches have joined them and they do gardening and house cleaning and all kinds of practical things to support foster carers and adopters. They've got such a reputation now that local authorities recommend people to them to receive that support. As we come to a close, how might God be asking you to respond? During this COVID-19 season, we have seen the church step up in all kinds of way to care for the stranger. It's been phenomenal to see how the church across the UK have responded to this crisis to make a difference. But what is God asking you to do? Is there someone in your community? Is there someone you encounter in day-to-day life that's a bit on the fringe, that you don't normally get on with, that God is nudging you to go above and beyond to care for them or to love them? Or it might be that God is speaking to you very specifically about fostering and adoption. If God is asking you to step up, then there's a few things I recommend you do. Firstly, I would urge you to read the Home for Good book. It's written by Krish and Miriam Kandaya. Krish is the founder and director and CEO of Home for Good. And the book is a real honest account of what adoption and fostering is really like. And it will really help you figure out whether this is for you or not. I'd also recommend you visit the Home for Good website, which can be found at www.homeforgood.org.uk. And there's loads of information and stories that will help you as you find out more. And also, we have a helpline which you can phone and answer your questions and point you in the right direction. And then the other thing I'd recommend you do is that you have a lot of foster carers and adoptive families within this church family. So why not speak to one of them and just find out about their experience, and they can pray with you and support you as you begin to kind of dip your toes in the water to see if this is for you or not. And secondly, if you feel that fostering or adoption is not something for you right now, maybe God is asking you to consider supporting families that are, whether it's a family within the church or in your extended family or in your neighbourhood or wherever else it may be. And I would urge you just to take that first step of asking someone, how could we support you? What could we do to support your journey as a fostering or adopting family? And different families have different needs. So don't presume you know how you can best support them, but they know what they need. And I'm sure they'll be delighted to have someone offer to help them. It can be really difficult to ask for help, can't it? So having someone come to you and say, how can we support you, can mean so, so much. Now, the thing I love about getting to speak at various churches is the opportunity to continue conversations over coffee. So I'm really sad that I won't be able to do that with you. But my email address is phil@homeforgood.org.uk. So if you have questions, if you have stories you'd like to share me, or if there's something I said that you disagree with and you'd like to talk further, please do feel free to email me and we can continue the conversation in that way.